This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is The Daily Digest with me, Juliet Jacobs, and joining me are Tina Camellia and Sharmila Gunnison. And if you've just joined us, this is our brand new show. We just kickstarted it yesterday, happening at 2 p.m. from Monday to Friday, where we will discuss a few local and international news stories, to give you something to think about as you get through the afternoon. Earlier, we spoke about how artist Jean-Michel Basquiat, he hid secret drawings using invisible UV paint, and we also asked you on social media, how are you going green in 2019? Well, this isn't with reference to our third story coming up later about, you know, some leaders, world leaders, you know, overturning some very important protection on our forests. And so we'll get to that later. But and if you'd like to share your thoughts with us, WhatsApp, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. But now we are going to move our focus over to India.
Yeah, so in the state of Kerala in India, early yesterday morning, two women officially entered the Sabarimala temple for the first time since a ban on women entering it was overturned last October 2018.
And violent protests have broken out around Kerala in response to this news. The event also comes in the wake of a wave of demonstrations across Kerala, which used the temple incident to highlight gender equality in India as a whole.
Tell me, why is the fact that these women entered the temple so significant?
See, because this particular temple, it's centuries old. It's dedicated to the deity known as Ayyappa, has historically been off limits to women of childbearing age because the male deity in the temple is celibate. So this practice was only made into an official ban in 1991 by the Kerala High Court. And in October last year, the Supreme Court of India overturned this ban, calling it unconstitutional.
And yet thousands of protesters have been blocking the temple, and even though several dozen women have tried, none made it into worship until yesterday. Even the two women who did make it in, they had to go in early in the morning with police escort and through the staff entrance. And after it became known that the women went in, the temple authorities even carried out a purification ritual.
Yeah, so we have with us Sivanandi Tanindaran, who is Executive Director of the Asian Pacific Resource and Research Center for Women. Sivanandi, why is the fact that these two women entered the Sabarimala temple so significant?
I think that this was a very significant Supreme Court decision. I think in the same way that, Sabarimala itself is supposed to be a special temple from what I have known from the past. So it is one of, if not the only one temple that I know that actually forbids entry to women of menstruating age. Now, and of course, in Indian parlance, you will see all the news media reporting it as menstruating women. It's not like women who are actually menstruating, but women of menstruating age. So a large bracket of women between the ages of probably about 13 to 55 are left out. And traditionally, I mean, from what I've known in the past from my parents, was that only like prepubescent girls and postmenopausal women were able to actually make their pilgrimage and enter the temple in the past, right? So no other temple actually has such a wide discrimination age barrier based on menstruation other than this temple. So I think that allowing women to enter is such a is an important progress for this aspect of it.
I guess it isn't surprising that the issue has become so fraught, you know, with tension, because it involves like hot button issues like religion and tradition, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the move has been criticized for undermining religious and cultural beliefs. The overturning of the ban is strongly opposed by India's governing Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP, which has ties to Hindu nationalist groups.
Yeah, and you know, this is actually quite a familiar scenario, right? Because whenever movements for equality find themselves up against religious beliefs or cultural practices, it's not an unfamiliar situation even to us here in Malaysia. Sivanandi, what are the complexities of speaking up for gender equality in these scenarios?
I think there is an uneasy nexus between like religion, culture, tradition and society, you know, and religion and what is sanctioned religious behavior has been an organizing factor in society for a long period. And this is can be seen across all, you know, cultures and countries. Also, within this similar context, right, women also were prohibited from different activities, whether it was cooking, they slept separately, they had limited movement during their menstruation cycle. But now women do all other activities during the menstrual cycle, right? And again, you know, women, even of a menstruating age, are able to defer their menstrual cycles, for example, through using contraceptives, and are able to do a hike across the Himalaya if they wanted to, right? But it is from religions that many cultures defer to when talking about women or women's roles or women's bodies. And many of these taboos around menstruation are kind of have a chop of approval from different religions, right? And so whether we like it or not, we will have to tackle, you know, the subject. So I think that it is something, a barrier that we will always be going up against when we're trying to unpack gender roles which are set in society. And how we navigate it is actually very important. But this is something that we cannot, you know, shy away from.
I suppose this is, you know, just part and parcel of the fight for gender equality, isn't it? I mean, and we've been seeing this temple issue become a reason for discussions on, you know, other things like women's rights have come to the surface, you know, even though it hasn't been a very easy journey.
Yeah, that's right. Excuse me. It's actually been a year filled with many discussions on gender in India, including the country's own Me Too movement, where lots of men have been revealed to have been sexually harassing everything from academia to the arts to the media. And all of these issues, I think, sort of came together on New Year's Day when the Communist Party of India, which actually governs the Strait of Kerala, organized a series of demonstrations that focused on gender equality.
Yeah, it's estimated that at least 3 million people came together to form a human chain that stretched about 480 kilometers to jointly protest against the treatment of women in India.
So Sivanandi, as a gender activist yourself, what is the impact of, you know, creating something like this?
I think it was really beautiful to see. And, you know, I think that the most important thing about it, as you said, it was a massive chain, 300 miles long, right? And it shows solidarity amongst women, you know, that and there were many women of like different faith, caste, ethnicities present there. And, you know, this for me is like, you know, what, you know, feminism was all about, being able to articulate, you know, the different forms of expression that we have about the oppressions that we face or the subjugation we face within society itself, right? And we can stand together. So I think that this was something that was very empowering to look at. And of course, as you know, there are just as many pictures out there denying those two women entering the temple as well. But I think that when we look at it, we know that, you know, there are two sides to that conversation, that and both are being articulated, which I think is really important, and that women were actually standing up and demonstrating for their part or their articulation of what they think, what their thoughts were about that. But, you know, the important thing that we need to note about the Supreme Court ruling is that, you know, it is wide enough to allow women to express their faith in their own way. So if women think they should not be going to the temple, they don't have to go to the temple. I mean, the Supreme Court ruling doesn't force you to go to the temple now, right? But if you wanted to go, you can, you know, and you have the freedom and the liberty to do that. So women can find their expression of their own rights and practice the religion according to, you know, what they feel really, you know, empowers them as not only as a woman, but also as, you know, as a soul, which is, you know, essentially supposed to be genderless and on towards their, you know, religious and spiritual journey.
I think that's a really good point, isn't it? Because there are women who are against the idea of the temple being opened up to other women in the first place, but the ruling does not force you to go to the temple if you believe you shouldn't. What it actually does is it opens up the choice to women themselves.
And, you know, that's wonderful. And the fact that, you know, women are coming together also, I mean, in terms of the protests, you know, coming together and women fighting up for women's rights, right?
Right. I think as Siva mentioned,
said,
it has actually brought together women of different castes, different backgrounds, different religions to speak up not just for this particular temple issue, but for things like equal pay and for, you know, against sexual harassment, about being able to go out and work. So I think in many ways, it's a way to bring women together to learn to speak up for themselves.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, unfortunately, that's not a view that is, you know, appealing to everyone. Protests are still continuing in Kerala, where, you know, following the women's entry into the temple, protesters have forced shops to close. They have blocked traffic. They've pelted stones at even the police. You know, police officers have been injured. You know, there have been reports that persons have actually died from injuries.
Yeah, let's hope the situation calms down. Reports are still coming in on the situation in Kerala. I'm sure we'll be watching it.
Yeah, I think we should be watching it.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's tragic. But I mean, any civil rights movement, I suppose, you know, it always unfortunately starts with this sort of violence, I suppose. And
it does. And I think the sort of that human chain demonstrated is that there's also great opportunity to express an idea. And I know that there's some criticism that it's a political move, that the Kerala government, which is a different party from the ruling government, organized this march as a way of turning people against the ruling
communists.
Government. Yes, I know. But, you know, does it matter? Because at the end of the day, it brought out several million women and highlighted issues that were important to them. So I think that in itself is a strong message to send out.
Yeah. So let's hope the situation calms down, I suppose.
I do hope so.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. But before that, we've got some songs for you. We've got a song for you. It's Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.